Hello, welcome to another episode of what we call Teen Matters, where you and me and my fellow conspirators help each other out on dealing with questions around young people, their behaviour and their place in the world, whether it be at school, in a workplace, in the family. With me, longtime educator John Hendry and clinical psychologist Andrew Fuller.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, you two, we've had some response to Teen Matters. We put it out there that if you had some issues surrounding the young people in your life that you would like us to try and discuss in a general fashion, of course, this is only general advice. You may need advice of a more specific nature pertinent to your situation. But let's start with Kelly, because I think Kelly's scenario is not uncommon. Here's a question for you. What sort of surgery is available for my teens to cut them off from their devices? I held off for as long as possible in letting them have access to screens. Nowadays, I can go into the bedroom and they will have one in each hand. My concerns are not necessarily what they're doing on their screens, but what they're not doing by being totally absorbed in the way they do this for hours on end. For example, she says, not meeting or talking to real people in person, not being in nature, not learning or being interested in new skills or hobbies. And she goes on to say, I've essentially given up on monitoring the situation as it is energetically exhausting and I don't wish to be in constant conflict with my children. Andrew, would you like to begin? Because I think Kelly's scenario is, as I said, widely experienced.
So there's three different parts of this, and we might go through them separately. The first one is that the addictiveness of the screen world for young people is compelling. And to expect young people to voluntarily step back from those screens and engage themselves in other activities is very, very unlikely. The amount of dopamine surge that comes really from playing a computer game or being involved in social media is such that basically once that's off, you get a depletion, and so other activities are less likely anyway. So the solution for Kelly, firstly, in terms of the surgery, is to use technology to fight technology. So there are a number of facilities, which I won't brand because we're on the ABC, that you can use to basically short-circuit or deny in particular devices in your household to have access to the internet at particular hours. And so Kelly should have a look at that. And
because some of those devices, in fact, I think you can actually put into your actual router, which means that your actual distribution of internet signal wirelessly through the house can be shut down or curtailed at certain times of the day.
That's right. And so then I sort of say to parents, you can be, well, it's up to you to decide how honest to be about it. You can either complain about the NBN and how dreadful it is and with the shortcomings of basically the network, or you can basically face up and say that's what you've done. But either way, you've basically effectively curtailed their access to screens for some of the day or some of the night.
So, Andrew, if you go about that, what kind of reaction can you expect?
World War III. There's no doubt that basically it's going to happen anyway. But you're going to get World War III whatever you do, Kelly, because sadly, you know, lots of the advice that occurs essentially is put all the devices in the kitchen on recharge by 9 p.m. at night, or basically have only access the computer from the dining room table where there's parental supervision. And I can tell you from my work as a psychologist, that advice can only really ever last about 3 days, and then parents get exhausted and give up.
Yeah.
And so unless you use technology to fight technology, you're on a losing war anyway.
So if you have an automated scheduling system where it's basically taken out of everybody's hands to have to administer, then it should be okay.
It'll take about 6 weeks of mayhem before things settle down, though.
Okay. John, have you had to deal with this as someone who's worked in schools for a long time?
Yes. My position would be to discuss it, why you're doing it, with your children. I think it's really important that to have buy-in that's not going to be World War III and go on forever, is to actually have a decent conversation, and don't underestimate the capacity for young people to come to grips with some of the issues that are being presented.
Oh, that's interesting. So what kind of language would you be using in that sit-down?
Could you help me with this? I want to try and help you broaden your perspective in life. And at the moment, you're being trapped by a process that traps most of us most of the time. can we just work on this? So that
that's a very interesting point, actually. Can I just role play here and say, as an adolescent, I know for a fact as my parent, John, that you're accessing the internet anytime you bloody want, and you love watching movies and various shows that you adore. Why is it okay for you to do it after 9 o'clock at night, and yet I'm not allowed to?
Michael, you make a very good point, and this is where I think you have to do what you say. So I think parents really have to actually be a role model. So, in fact, they can't be absorbed to the extent that they are building a different world for themselves. I think really it has to be a team effort.
Okay.
And if it's not, then you'll always have that argument. It's a trite argument to say, well, I'm an adult and you're a child.
That's not going to fly,
is it? It's not going to fly at all. So really, you ask for help and you work together to achieve an outcome that you're happy with as a parent and that the young people are happy with as well.
Andrew, is that a reasonable way to go? The parents need to start to walk the walk as well as talk the talk?
Well, it's the second part of what I was talking about. There are three aspects. The second one really is, how do we help people to become responsible users of digital technology? I mean, computers give us much more than they take away, although sometimes we don't think about them that way. Mm. And so they give us access to the world. They give us access to a variety of people, some of whom are undesirable, admittedly, but lots of people who are very, very interesting. And so it broadens your worldview. So used responsibly, of course, it's the future of business. It's the future of social interaction. And it's the future of friendship as well.
That's really positive of you. Can I just come back at you on that and go, as another parent like Kelly of teenagers, it really gets my goat that they get absolute access potentially to an enormous portal of information and experience and culture and ideas, yet no one teaches them how to regulate that access and where to find things aside from YouTube, social media, Snapchat, and dumb videos that other people send. Where is the research training in our education institutions to show people how to dig below the surface of what's valid and what's not valid online? That's what I question.
One of the specialists in this area is a fellow by the name of Alan November, and he trains young people actually in exactly how to do that, how to validate information you're getting online, because we need to do that. So if we don't teach young people how to do that, then they're susceptible to all sorts of weird ideas and strange kind of fads, and whoever's opinion, however inexpert it truly is, they can start to believe. And I think we're all a bit vulnerable to that in terms of fake news.
Yes, we are. And there's such a lack of critical thinking around digital access. So for Kelly, of course, as a parent, her main concern was quantity of time online rather than the quality of the time. She says she wasn't so concerned about that. Andrew and Johnson, final thoughts of advice for Kelly and other parents who are worried about the amount of time their teenagers, their young people, adolescents are spending with their head down over a screen?
Well, the third part really, I mean, the first part was use technology to fight technology. The second part is develop responsible digital citizenship. And the third part really is conversational impoverishment, so that we see a world in which lots of young people aren't able or aren't used to having sustained conversations. And so this means, of course, that rituals in schools, so some schools become so techno-savvy that the conversation goes out the window and the thinking sometimes as well. But also families can do the same. And so it's really thinking about, when do we draw back as a family? When basically our device is prohibited, we're sitting down, we're having a meal, we're going to have a conversation. And again, following my 6-week rule, that is also going to be difficult, because if you out of the habit of having conversations, what emerges invariably are arguments. And so you think, what a great idea this was. Basically, we've stopped the devices and now we're arguing. But you've got to get through that hump, basically, to start having reasonable conversations and learn how to do it.
John, we're talking about Kelly and her situation where she's got teenagers dealing with digital screens. Would you advocate that, in fact, you have a conversation about this technology younger?
Oh, children have access to technology now, preschool, and schools now are requiring kids to become techno-savvy in primary school. I think the conversations have to be had very early on and slowly but surely taken through. I think it's too late to start at 13, 14, 15. I think it's too late. And they're too difficult, and Andrew's pointed out.
Yeah.
I think start the conversations early and sort it out in your own mind as a parent as what you want to achieve. We really want young people to live healthy relationship-type lives where they are face-to-face, not face-to-screen.
Well, look, hopefully, Kelly and other people listening, this will help. So be aware, you've got technology to help you get that internet cut back at certain times of the day and night, if that's what you want to do. The second point you made, Andrew, was?
Really developing digital savvy. Basically, have, you know, social media, for example, is the business card of the future. We need to think about how you present a good image online and how you use it well.
So help young people to help themselves be who they want to be, where they want to be.
That's right.
And then the third being, have conversations as a real family when that internet has been cut down.
Have real conversations, face-to-face.
And when you say real too, John, I imagine you're talking about, you know, what's going on with your life.
Kind exactly. of conversations. Yes, real conversations.
Right. Okay. Andrew, John, it's been great. This has been Teen Matters. And if you would like to weigh in with a scenario you'd like us to discuss, we may not have all the answers, but I tell you what, these two have got some experience under their belts and I just go along for the ride. You can always get in contact. If you go to the Life Matters front page online, there is a contact Life Matters area on the right-hand side. Click on that. And you can just put the subject line as Teen Matters. It'll find its way to me. John, Andrew, thank you very much.
Thank you.